the studios of Boise State Public Radio, I'm Gemma Gaudette, and you're listening to Idaho Matters. Both the FDA and the CDC have given the green light for COVID-19 vaccines for America's 20 million children who are 6 months old or up. And the Biden administration is making 10 million doses available just this week. Now, both the Pfizer and Moderna vaccines are now available for younger children. So parents, well, they still have a lot of questions, and now that that authorization has finally been approved. So with us today to talk about this, as well as other COVID news, is Dr. David Pate, the former CEO of St. Luke's Health System and a current member of Idaho's Coronavirus Task Force. Also, remember, if you have a question about COVID, make sure you send us an email, idahomatters@boisestate.edu. And Dr. Pate, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Gemma.
So Dr. Pate, as I mentioned, parents of kiddos who are under the age of five are finally able to get their children vaccinated. But I think, you know, there are still questions. So let's answer a few of them. So kids ages 6 to 17, they got that green light for vaccines last year. Why in the world did it take so long for children under the age of 6 to be approved?
Yeah, well, I think it's a combination of things. The first thing is, obviously, before we take chances with that age group, we kind of want everybody else to be the guinea pigs. You know, we do the clinical trials. That's large numbers of patients, of participants in the trial. Mm-hmm. So we get a pretty good idea about whether a vaccine's safe. But when you deploy that vaccine then to hundreds of millions of people, you will see some rare things. And of course, we have seen some rare things with the vaccine. And so doing it on the other age groups, first of all, allows us to get a better idea of how safe is it, how effective is it. But the hard part about these little kids is they are not little adults. We have to treat them different. Their immune systems are different. And so you have to use a lower dose of vaccine. That takes a bit of guesswork. It's an educated guess, but it's guesswork. And what happened was, and you and I talked last year, that I was very hopeful we were going to have vaccines for this age group the beginning of this year, January, February, mm-hmm. sometime in that time frame. What happened was Pfizer, who was out ahead of Moderna on this, had lowballed the dose, it looks like. I mean, we don't know for sure, but that's our best guess, is that when they did have to guess what dose to give these youngest kids, they went a little low. So what happened is, after the second shot with Pfizer, where you normally, in all the older kids and in adults, where we see the kind of the full immune response, we weren't seeing it in the kids and the young kids. Mm-hmm. And so what that meant is they either had to scrap that and go to a new trial with a higher dose, or just keep going and do a third dose. And that's the option they chose. So it took more time because, first of all, they spaced that third dose out more than the first two. And I think that's a reasonable thing to do. Mm-hmm. So they decided instead of the 21 days, they would go 2 months. And they did that. And then what they saw is, okay, we got a good response, but it took three vaccines. Meanwhile, Moderna had gone with a higher dose, lower than what they give to older kids and adults, but a higher dose than what Pfizer went with. And therefore, what they found is they got a good response after two shots. But it was all of this that kind of delayed things. But, you know, I think I speak for many grandparents and many parents that at least, thank God, we got them now.
Oh, absolutely, Dr. Pate. Okay, so as you were mentioning, Pfizer and Moderna, the dosages seem to be a bit different. And I think this is where the confusion comes in, because even what I was reading, now granted, I was on vacation, so maybe I wasn't paying as close of attention as I should have been. But it was a bit confusing as to how the dosages are going to work. So can you break that down with us? And because they're different. So let's start with Pfizer and then go to Moderna.
Sure. So with Pfizer, we give adults a full dose, and then the older kids, they got a third of a dose. And then these youngest kids that are the ones that we're just now approving for, they get a tenth of what the adults get. So on the other hand, with Moderna, those youngest kids get a third of the dose that the adults got. So but they are slightly different vaccines, and you cannot directly compare doses of one vaccine to the other, because it's more than just that. But that is a simplistic way to look at this to help understand that what you're getting with Pfizer is your youngest kids are getting about a tenth of the dose that an adult would get, whereas with Moderna, they're still getting a reduced dose, but it's a higher amount.
And then with Pfizer, they're getting three doses. With Moderna, it still the two?
That you've got it correct. So what happened was because, and again, I can't say this with certainty, but I think what our educated guess is that, you know, Pfizer just lowballed the dose a little bit, which is easy to do. And so I'm not saying that accusingly or faultingly of them. It's just you have to make an educated guess, and they probably went a little low. And so what happened was that after what would normally be a full primary series, two shots, just like, you know, older kids and adults got, unfortunately, they didn't see the immune response that we're looking for. And so that led them also to conclude it's likely the dose. And so, as I said, there were two options. Do they just scrap that and start a new trial with a higher dose, which I think they understood parents were really wanting to, hey, we need to get a vaccine. So they decided instead, well, then let's give a third dose. And they spaced it another 2 months from that second dose and then gave the third dose. And then what they did see is then, okay, now the cumulative dose, it did get you the immune response that you wanted to see in those kids, but it took three doses. Whereas with Moderna, after that second dose, they did get that immune response that they were looking for. So I think that while that may be confusing for parents, there's a logical reason. I think that what I worry about, Gemma, is that, you know, because I think parents are so used to you get your kid two shots that what I'm afraid is people will be confused. And if they get Pfizer, they'll just get their youngest kid two shots. That won't do it. And that's my concern. If your youngest kid is getting Pfizer, you have to get that third shot. And that is going to take more time. And you know, that could be a consideration for those parents that have these young kids who maybe this fall, maybe they're starting kindergarten, maybe they're going to be in daycare. You know, hard to believe we're already nearing the end of June. So if you want to get them protected in time for, you know, starting kindergarten or maybe being in a daycare, that could be a reason to think, well, maybe I should go with the Moderna. Both vaccines are going to be effective. It's just that you have to get three of Pfizer to get the same response as two of Moderna.
And so then it's going to take a little bit longer.
A caution that is just the youngest kids. So that this does not apply. If we're talking about your older kids and they got two doses of Pfizer, that's fine. Mm-hmm. They're fine. It's just the younger kids.
It's just this five and under age group that we're talking
That's
about.
That's right. Exactly.
And Dr. Payne, I know last week you and Sam touched on touched on this topic, and I think it's really important to remember that the Kaiser Family Foundation says that only one in every five parents of children who are under the age of five will actually give their children the vaccine immediately. And I have to say, Dr. Pate, I'm not necessarily surprised by that, but it is still one of those things where you wish you could say, you know, it's been studied. It's, you know, it's okay to do this, because the quicker we can get these kiddos vaccinated, maybe we can get to a new phase of this pandemic.
Well, Jimmy, you're exactly right, because it is important to get kids vaccinated for just what you're saying. First of all, kids, they can get sick, they can be hospitalized, and they can even die. Fortunately, it's at much lower rates than adults. But if you just look at causes of hospitalization or death for kids, and you only look at that, then COVID is among that top 10. And so it is an issue. But more importantly, it's important to get kids vaccinated so that we decrease the transmission, because kids play a key role in that transmission. We decrease the chances for more variants. We protect people in the family of that child, and that we prevent kids from getting MISC, that inflammatory mm-hmm. condition that can land them in the hospital several months later, or long COVID, which kids get. We don't understand it a lot, but we can't, unlike adults, where we can generally kind of have a good idea who's going to do worse and who's going to do better, that's a hard call with kids. It's hard to predict. And so I do understand parents being a little cautious, and, you know, especially when there's been so much disinformation out there. And of course, we've even got a physician here in Idaho trying to scare parents about vaccine. But I think the thing is, if parents will, in, you know, they're right to be concerned, but don't look at it as the risk of giving the vaccine or the risk of not giving the vaccine. The question needs to be the risk of giving the vaccine or the risk of getting COVID. And because this, what is happening is we're getting more and more transmissible variants. And unless your kid is homeschooling and cut off from a lot of contact with others, they're going to be repeatedly exposed. We don't know what the consequences of repeated infections are, especially this frequently. And it could harm some children. And so what I think is, if any of the side effects that you're worried about of a vaccine causing, almost all of them are manyfold greater with COVID. And so I understand parents' hesitation, but I can tell you, my grandkids, and if I had kids that age, they would be vaccinated this week. In fact, I have one remaining grandkid that's not vaccinated. I've already been talking to that mom. We're planning for vaccination this week.
Well, and Dr. Pate, I think that as a parent, I mean, I remember even especially, you know, being that new parent and with my first child, you know, sitting down with my pediatrician and basically, you know, interrogating him about vaccines in general, just A, because there was misinformation out there even before COVID around vaccines, and wanting to be educated and wanting to make the right choices for my child. And I think that, you know, that approach, I think the majority of parents want to make sure they're doing the right thing for their child. So I would also say, if you have questions, talk to your pediatrician, right? But vaccines keep your children safer, because we live in a world 2.5 years into this where I cannot have my children live in a bubble. So the vaccine allows them to have a life.
That's right. Exactly right, Gemma. And so I cannot urge enough. If you have a pediatrician or a family physician, go in and talk to that physician. Or if you want to make sure that you're getting good information and not disinformation, go to the American Academy of Pediatrics website. That is a very revered organization of all the pediatrics and the latest pediatric thinking. So there are good sites that you can go to. You have to be careful where you're going to get your information, but you can go there, you talk to your pediatrician, lots of ways to get good information. Beware of the disinformation.
Because we need to mention that COVID cases are up in children when we compare to where we were this time last year, because in just 1 week, this month alone, almost 88,000 child COVID cases were reported. And of those, almost 500 children died. I mean, that's not a huge number, but I think one child dying from this is too much. So Dr. Pate, this goes back, right? I mean, this goes back to how important it is to get your children vaccinated. And we should note that I'm sure, Dr. Pate, that 88,000 child COVID cases, that's actually not as many because people home test nowadays. So it's not being all the cases aren't being reported.
Well, precisely. And, you know, as you say, Gemma, we have to be careful we don't get numb to the numbers. And you think, okay, 500 children under 5 years old dying from COVID. Well, you know, the chances aren't great that'll be one of my kids. But think about if those 500 kids had two parents each, or those 500 kids had two, three, four grandparents each. Imagine the intense pain of losing
the
your
devastation.
Child at that age from a preventable disease. So it's a big deal. And I do think that we have to take this into consideration. Just as you said, there's a lot of disinformation out there, always has been, but there's much more lately. And we have to be careful that we're getting good information. Let's just put a couple of myths to bed. Number one, you've already addressed the myth that, well, COVID doesn't kill kids. It does, not proportionally as much as older kids, but if you look at all-cause mortality for children, COVID would be in the top 10. If you take out things that aren't diseases like accidents, suicide, you know, traumatic events, then it's in the top 5. If you just look at what is the top respiratory virus killer of kids, it's COVID. So it's not insignificant. So, but again, I don't even think that's the most important reason to get vaccinated. There's a lot we still don't know about COVID and the long-term effects and the health effects to kids. And we just shouldn't be cavalier about that until we know more. Now, on the other hand, just as you said, that doesn't mean you wrap up your kids in bubble wrap and keep them home in isolation. No, kids have to be kids, but that doesn't mean we can't take some reasonable precautions when cases are spiking and high, and getting our kids fully vaccinated.
Mm-hmm. So Dr. Pate, we've got lots of questions, so let's get to some of those. Toby writes in, do we have to worry about getting the new COVID vaccine for babies intermingling with other vaccines? And I think that's a really good question and goes back to parents' concerns, Dr. Pate, about what this vaccine will do.
Well, that's right. And, you know, it's a really good question. Early on, when we were just beginning our vaccination campaign at the beginning of 2021, we did ask people not to get another vaccine with the COVID vaccine. That's not because there would be an interaction or a problem between the vaccines. It's just that if there were going to be problems, we wanted to be able to sort that out. And if you get multiple vaccines at one time, we couldn't. I think we're at the place where we've got things sorted out pretty well. So if your pediatrician or family physician recommends that let's get your child the COVID vaccine, but, you know, like a lot of kids, they got behind on vaccines due to the COVID pandemic. If they're behind and they need something, if the pediatrician or family physician recommends that, that's fine. On the other hand, if you as the parent, you know, you're still a little cautious and you just want to get one and say, doc, I'll be back in 2 weeks for the other. Well, that's fine, too.
And Dr. Pate, let's talk about what's going on right now locally with our COVID numbers. Because just this last week, where Ada County is, when we look at the CDC recommendations, it is that the recommendation is that everyone masks indoors in public spaces once again. I highly doubt we're going to be seeing that happening. But Dr. Pate, we are in a surge. And yes, hospitals are not overwhelmed, but are we at the in what you've been able to discern, where are we in terms of this surge? Is this the beginning of it? You know, what is our summer going to potentially look like?
Yeah. It's a little hard to know where you are when you're in a surge, because mm-hmm. you generally only know in retrospect as you see the numbers. But, you know, what we do know is we're not at the very beginning. It's already been surging, and it's been surging for weeks now. And the way we know that is we can follow the case numbers have been rising, the wastewater has been rising, and the testing positivity percentage has been rising. But now we're also seeing more hospitalizations. And we know we typically see hospitalizations generally not occur within the first couple or several weeks of the surge. So we're well into the surge. I think the tough question is, are we at the peak of this surge, or is this going to get worse? I don't know the answer to that. I don't think this is going to get as bad as Omicron was at the very beginning, or what most people call Omicron at the very beginning of the year. I don't think we're in danger of that. But I think what we are at risk for is that, you know, we could very well be close to the peak of this surge, and then things go down. And then what my fear is, people are going to be lulled by this, that they're going to say, well, first of all, this wasn't so bad. And second, that, you know, COVID is seasonal, which it is not, but there's a lot of talk out there that it's seasonal, and they're going to think, you know, it's summer, so we don't have to worry. Well, what we do have to, I wouldn't say we need to fear, but we do need to take seriously, is that BA4 and BA5 are on the rise. You'll remember, Gemma, that not long ago, some of the government spokespeople and the CDC were saying, we need to prepare for a really big surge this fall where we could have 100,000 people, sick and with COVID and all. I think they didn't say, but I think what they were thinking is that that's when they were estimating, based on the models, we were going to get BA4 and BA5. I think it's going to be sooner than that, based on how much it's already increasing. And so what my fear is that the combination of people being under a false impression that we won't have a surge during the summer. And I'll remind you, we have had surges during the summer in the past, and also being under the impression from these other folks that we're not going to have a problem until this fall, that they may let their guard down. The other thing that I am concerned about is there's been all this nonsense about, well, viruses inevitably evolve to become milder. That is not true. The hepatitis viruses have not evolved to be milder. Ebola hasn't evolved to be milder. HIV virus hasn't evolved to be milder. Measles hasn't evolved to be milder. So that we just have, you know, it's just not true. And the second thing is that I think there's been so much talk about Omicron being milder, which in many respects it has on an individual basis. But it's been so infectious that it's infected so many more people that actually we've had more excess deaths with Omicron than we did back with Delta, which is what everybody thinks was more severe. So I think we tend to underestimate Omicron. And now BA4 and BA5, which are just other sublineages of Omicron, instead of evolving to be milder, there's some suggestion that their evolution has actually become to cause more severe disease, to have more propensity to act like Delta did, where you get the pneumonia, the respiratory failure, that kind of stuff. Don't know for sure, but what we are seeing play out, if you look at some of the countries where BA4 or BA5 or both are causing harm right now, England, Portugal, a few other countries, Israel, what we're seeing is even though many of those countries have higher vaccination rates than us, they are seeing their hospitalizations go way up. We don't tend to see as many people in the ICU, so that's kind of a blessing. So maybe it is more severe, but not as severe as what we've got. I don't know. We're going to have to watch. But I am concerned that people are kind of getting numb to this and not going to be prepared for something that may be more risk, especially to vulnerable kids and vulnerable adults.
Right. Speaking of which, Vicky wrote in and she says, my high school friends and I travel once a year. For this next trip, some are saying that we should be perfectly safe, allowing those who are unvaccinated, saying there is no medical evidence that anyone is at a higher risk of infection from an unvaccinated person as a vaccinated one. She goes on to say, we have one friend in the group with an autoimmune disease and another that has a spouse with COPD that we especially want to protect. Our next trip is January of 2023. So is this idea accurate, that there's no medical evidence that anyone is at a higher risk of infection if you're vaccinated versus unvaccinated? Does that make sense, Dr. Pate?
No. And in fact, we have plenty of evidence that that is not true. That is a common talking frame of those people that are anti-vaxxers and perpetuate some of the disinformation about the COVID vaccines. So let me just clarify what it is. If you are fully vaccinated, and particularly now that we're dealing with these latest variants that do have more immune escape, all of the various Omicron sublineages, if you are fully vaccinated and boosted, we have very good evidence that, number one, you're less likely to get infected. It's not impossible to get infected. And of course, you can have a breakthrough infection, but you are less likely to get infected if you're vaccinated. If you don't get infected, you're not going to spread it to somebody else. So there's one benefit already, is that you're less likely to get infected. Number two, if you do get infected, it appears from the studies that you will not shed the infectious virus for as long as somebody who is unvaccinated. So not only if I'm going to be around somebody that has COVID, I would far prefer for them to be fully vaccinated and boosted, because less likely that they're going to transmit it to me. And we see this in families. You can look at what we call the secondary attack rate, where what is the percentage of people in families that get infected from someone that has COVID. And it's very clear that if that person is fully vaccinated and boosted, very few people in the family get infected, if anybody. But if they're unvaccinated, we see much higher rates. Now, point about this is that you've got those at-risk people. You've got somebody with COPD. You've got somebody with an autoimmune disease. Unvaccinated people are a huge risk to them because they don't have great protection. Now, some of those people are going to say, well, yeah, they're unvaccinated, but they were previously infected. Okay, well, then a big question is about this so-called natural immunity. Was that infection one of these various Omicron sublineages? In other words, was there infection in 2022? If it was, they have almost no protection against these variants now, if that's what it was. Now, if they had an older variant, Delta or Alpha, Beta, they might have some, but you know, that was a long time ago, so there also may be some waning. But if somebody is counting on their natural immunity to protect others, please stay away from me.
And me. Thank you so much. Dr. Pate, as always, we so appreciate you coming in and taking time to talk with us about this, in particular, answering people's questions and then talking about the approval of the vaccine for kiddos age 5 and under. As always, we've been talking with Dr. David Pate. He is the former CEO of St. Luke's Health System and a current member of the Idaho Coronavirus Task Force. If you have COVID-19 questions for Dr. Pate, email us, idahomatters@boisestate.edu, and we will get to those questions next week. Thanks, Dr. Pate, for your time.
Thank you, Gemma.